To another brand new episode of the Scorebook Live Today podcast. It is August 7th. Football season is creeping up slowly, and there's still a lot else going on in the high school sports scene here in Washington. I'm Andy Bueller with Scorebook Live, and on the line I have Todd Millis and Dan Dickow. How are you guys doing?
I don't know how the temperature is on the west side, but we're pushing 100 today with some fire from the some smoke from the fires on the east side of the state. But I've been very impressed with the coverage for Scorebook Live California, and I'm very excited to see what you guys are coming up with for football, because it's crazy to believe high school football practice starts in, I think, about 12 days, if I'm not mistaken. Right, guys?
Yeah, August 21st is the first day. And how you guys doing? It was nice having a week off, but we have a lot to talk about. And yes, it's going to be a blitz of football previews. But August 21st is the first day of preseason football camp, and then we get going right after Labor Day on September 5th and 6th.
Yeah, Dan, to jump in on what you were saying, I mean, Scorebook Live California site, they've got all their media days this week for football, and they've been churning out a lot of content. So if you care about high school football in the greater LA area and in California in general, scorebooklive.com/California is going to be your place right now. But up here in Washington this week, Todd, you spent last weekend, you went to in Tacoma, Isaiah Thomas, former All-Star with the Celtics, NBA player from who attended Curtis High School. He hosted his annual Zeke End tournament, which brings the community out in Tacoma and also brings some of his NBA friends to the city. Do you want to talk about what that event was like this year? Was it any different than previous years? And what was your experience as someone who's covered Isaiah since his high school days?
Yeah, I mean, I went to the first Zeke End tournament at Foss High School 6 years ago. This is an event that's grown rapidly. You can tell by the amount of security people that are around Isaiah these days. But, you know, he's been good about bringing 2, 3, 4 NBA guys out every year. And they're usually, you know, different guys. Derrick Rose came out on Friday. He didn't play in it, but he was kind enough to sign autographs and hang out with some of the spectators. A couple years ago, the last one I'd covered before this, John Wall had come out, and I know he and Isaiah are good friends. But I mean, he's, you know, it's a 5-on-5 tournament. It's not, you know, skill building. He's not teaching little kids how to dribble, or it's just come out and watch, you know, basketball in the absence of no Seattle Supersonics. He just wants to put professional basketball on display. And a lot of it's, you know, some of it's the good college players that are overseas in Europe and things. And then good for him this year. He's had some injuries there with that hip the last couple of years, but he was able to play again in his own tournament. Now, he didn't win the championship. They got bounced. But he played, you know, 5 full games, playing with Kevin Porter Jr., Tony Roten, Trey Simmons. I know that's a guy that Dan knows pretty well. So, I mean, a lot of good talent, and Tacoma Community College was packed. I mean, that's as busy as I've seen, as packed as I've seen that gymnasium with spectators, just thirsting for basketball. And you know, they're playing short gym, so, you know, that you could watch 2 games at the same time. So 3 days of action-packed games from sun up to sundown. This thing keeps getting bigger. Isaiah has put a lot of his investment in this. I don't see this event going away anytime soon.
Yeah, I love following the event on Twitter and Instagram, which I did over the weekend. You mentioned a number of guys that I know that are still playing, were involved. Guys try to reorganize their summer if they've got different things going on to make it to the west side and down to Tacoma to be a part of it. Jamal Crawford, I believe, even takes a break for his crossover during the week end of the Isaiah Thomas does his event. So it's pretty cool. And again, you know, it's not your typical community camp give back by an NBA player. It's let's showcase some high level players trying to go at each other and putting on a show when possible. So I like it when guys do these type of events.
Yeah, I covered one a couple years ago during when I was an intern at the Tacoma News Tribune, and some of the similar faces were there, and it's just great to see so many familiar faces on the high school, former high school and high school scene, you know, be there and really, really showcase for, you know, put on for the Tacoma community and the state of Washington, more so. But Todd, you wrote a really nice story on Scorebook Live Washington, you know, talking to Isaiah about just what the event means, where he's at in his NBA career. You can find that story on scorebooklive.com/Washington. And it was interesting. I saw a bit of chatter on Twitter from Isaiah and from people in the Curtis community. And I just shared your story. And Isaiah quote tweeted me on Twitter and said, you know, he had wanted to make everyone let everyone know that he didn't go to Curtis High School, which he clearly did. But there seems to be some sort of rift between him and Curtis. What do you know about that? And is that anything new?
Well, I can verify that he did play at Curtis because I covered him for his sophomore and junior year. I don't think I was imagining that. No, in 2005 and 06. And I've told people this. He's the best offensive basketball player I've ever covered in high school basketball in Washington in the 23 years I was at the Tacoma News Tribune. You know, and a lot of it had to do – and he was a spectacle. I mean, people from the community in those 2 years would come out and pack Curtis Gymnasium to watch him play. And a lot of it had to do with the fact that, you know, he's 5'8", 5'9", and able to score on anybody. As Dan knows, he's got this interesting build. He's so strong in his lower body. He's able to create space in so many different subtle ways to create space from a defender to get his shot off. And it's, you know, it's, I'm sure this is years and years of him being the smallest guy in the court and having to try and survive that way. It's phenomenal. He was a 16-year-old celebrity at that time. And you know, it's interesting. He didn't graduate from Curtis, and let's make that point very clear. After his junior year, he went to South Kent, and then came back and played at the University of Washington, and now he's in the NBA. And this is something that's been going on for a few years. Isaiah, you know, he's never shied away from the attention. He's never shied away from the celebrity status. He likes to collect jerseys. He wants to have a jersey from everywhere he's ever played, hanging in his personal gym at Al Davies Girls and Boys Club here in Hilltop. And, you know, Curtis isn't going to budge on it. They're not, you know, as of right now, they're not planning on, you know, retiring Isaiah's number 3 jersey. And it's created a little bit of tension between Isaiah and the school. And it's so much that Isaiah kind of lashed out at his alma mater, you know, over social media here this last week. So, you know, I see both sides. I don't want to sound like a diplomat here. You know, Hall of Fames in general are reserved for people who graduate from schools, both in high school and college. And I know Dan knows this. But at the same time, this is probably the best basketball player to ever come out of Curtis. And for 2 years, he was the reason why people would fill that gymnasium. I mean, it was such an interesting spectacle at that time. That, you know, could he be the exception to the rule? Absolutely. It's up to Curtis to whether they want to evaluate the criteria and someday retire that and maybe put him in a Hall of Fame. But right now, you know, they're sort of at an impasse, and it's not going to happen here in the near future. And it's obviously created some tension between both parties.
Well, I think what you're seeing is a player who has definite pride in his hometown and what would have been his alma mater, and he's feeling a little bit, you know, slighted, which is understandable, because a guy like Isaiah, to kind of, you know, go against all odds throughout his whole career, through high school, college, and then carve out such a great NBA career, you've kind of got to have that mentality, that chip on your shoulder that I'm going to do it my way. And it's worked for him. You know, I hate to see, you know, successful athletes kind of being at odds with their, you know, high school community. But unfortunately, you know, I see both sides of the coin, and I try to stay down the middle, as you mentioned you are, Todd. But, you know, I think high school and college jersey retirements are meant for alma maters. You know, and I think those are much, much more special than, you know, having your jersey retired in the NBA. And I don't mean that as a slight to anybody who's ever had the jersey retired in the NBA, because that's an amazing accomplishment. But you could go to the NBA, to a team, play 2-3 years, help them win a title, and get your jersey retired. I mean, in a high school or a college community, that means you've done everything that you've set out to do, have success on the playing field, whether it's basketball, football, whatever, but then graduate from that school, because that's the purpose of high school and college, is to graduate, as opposed to the NBA, which is just be successful on the court. So, you know, I think it's I'm sure it will get cleared up, Todd. I know you know that landscape much better than I do, but I can't imagine it's going to be that big of an issue for too long. At least I hope not.
So that'd be an interesting thing to revisit during the season. I saw a lot of chatter from the Curtis community during the basketball season, that is, just, you know, on Twitter, and it was something that Isaiah was clearly vocal about. But a lot of basketball talk going on at this point in the summer. The NCAA held an event 2 weeks ago at four sites across the country called the NCAA Basketball Academy, which some high school players within Washington State competed in, went down to, where, and it was invite only. One of those was Mount Spokane incoming junior Tyson Degenhart, who has seen his recruiting profile steadily rise. He was obviously a part of a Mount Spokane team that made a strong run in the 3A state tournament last year. But Tyson, who does a player diary on Scorebook Live Washington, he reflected on that event and kind of listed the pros and cons of what he saw. You know, the event is the NCAA says the event is meant to kind of acquiesce kids and get kids familiar to, prospective college basketball players familiar with the college basketball experience. It's also a great recruiting. It's a great way of kids to get in front of a bunch of college coaches. So in its first year, Dan, what do you see as some of the pros and cons of doing an event like this? And if you're a guy like Tyson Degenhart, what do you get out of going to an event like this if you're invited?
Well, I think the biggest benefit and positive for a guy like Tyson Degenhart, who's an obvious D1 talent, who's now starting to see a number of offers roll in, is the fact that he doesn't play for one of the most high-profile AAU teams, not just in the state, but on the West Coast. I mean, you know, everybody knows and thinks of Seattle Rotary first off when you know AAU basketball in the state. Then you probably think of Friends of Hoop or Team Levine or Washington Supreme as being the next best. He plays for Team Sabonis, which is just basically a number of kids in the Spokane area. And he's done a great job of, in the tournaments that they've gone to, showcasing his skills. Now, you know, those kids that are on the higher profile programs, they've already probably had many more opportunities to play in front of college coaches than Tyson has, just based on the team that he's playing with. And the fact that, you know, he's able to go down to the NCAA Academy in Phoenix and play in front of a larger group of coaches and get some exposure, I think is huge. You know, I don't necessarily think that the academies, the way the NCAA structured them, ended up the way that they wanted. They probably thought they were going to get the quote-unquote best kids across the country, when that's just not the case. I think what happened after reading more into it and talking to a few people is, you know, it was a perfect opportunity for your guys like a Tyson Degenhart, who aren't on your high-profile AAU teams or aren't from a major media market where it's easy to get write-ups and it's easy to be seen. It's perfect for a guy like Tyson to be able to kind of come in under the radar and really get a chance to put your best foot forward in front of a lot of college coaches. So, yeah, there were going to be a number of Division I players at these academies. But I think a lot of it is going to be, you know, your Division II and your definite Division III type players. And by all accounts, Tyson went down there and played very well. He's a Spokane kid, so I have the opportunity to see him in the gym quite frequently. And he continues to improve. I mean, I will say this. You know, I think his recruiting was slow to pick up, but I think it's only going to get very heavy from here on out. And it's going to be interesting to see just who reaches out to him over the next 3-4 months.
He picked up his third offer from Idaho State on the last day of the camp, and then just received an offer at the end of last week from Eastern Washington. So you're right, Dan. It really might start picking up for him from here. So turning to football, Trey Knight, one of the best throwers, the best thrower in the state of Washington right now, track and field, and potentially one of the better throwers to come out of the state from Ridgefield, 2A Ridgefield in Southwest Washington. He has made a decision to do something that he hasn't done in his high school career entering his senior season, and that's play football. For the last few years, Ridgefield has been trying to gain momentum as a program as that community continues to grow. And so it meets an interesting point of time when Trey Knight, you know, arguably one of the, if not the greatest athlete to potentially come out of Ridgefield for sure, but you know, someone who has the 2024 Tokyo Olympics throwing the hammer in his kind of future plans on his so-and-so vision board. He's someone who is getting offered by, you know, any and every high-level Division I track program. And he has said for the first time in his high school career, look, I want to play football. And so Ridgefield, it's there's a story I have, which by the time this airs will be published on Scorebook Live Washington, where I went out to Ridgefield and talked to Trey. He is an incredibly imposing athlete and someone that played football up until eighth grade. So grew up playing, and then once he got to high school, made a calculated decision with his family that he would just pursue throwing because that was his future. And it certainly is his future, but sitting in the stands on Friday nights with his friends, you know, watching a football team that he felt like he could contribute to and a sport that he really missed. It eventually, you know, led him to tell his parents, look, I want to play football. I want to do this before I go out. So he's going to be the way they incorporate him. He'll walk in, if not probably the best athlete on the team, raw athlete. I mean, he will walk in and be a very exciting player to see and potentially a game changer for a program in Ridgefield that's in a league with 2A defending state champ Hawkinson and definitely from a fan's perspective, someone who you can't miss. Now, Todd, in your experience covering high school sports, I mean, how much of a crossover is it between throwers and football players? And do you see that? Because kind of the sense that I got was that there's a couple of players who a couple of throwers who play football, but it tends to be some of the bigger lineman guys. And that's just not Trey. He's going to be a wide receiver.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fairly common crossover. I mean, you can go back to the early 80s. Vince Goldsmith, who holds the state shot put all-time mark, almost 70 feet. You know, he went down and he was a two-sport athlete at Mount Tahoma, went to the University of Oregon, played football. It's fairly common, but you're right that most of those guys are big brutish linemen. You know, they're going to be in the trenches where it's physical and you don't have to move around a lot. This is a way better athlete than most throwers I've ever seen. And you kind of have to be to throw the hammer. It's not like you just kind of spin and throw the shot. And a hammer is a highly technical sport. It requires obviously strength, but some explosion and speed. He has all that. I mean, now I'm really sad that Sawyer Racanelli is going to miss the season at Hawkinson. Can you imagine that explosion in a GSHL 2A league game between Ridgefield and Hawkinson? Those two guys going at each other. So, but I'm happy to hear that Trey Knight, you know, it's a senior year. You know, he's risking a little bit of injury, so there's a little risk involved. But you know, he wants to go have fun. I don't see any downside in the fact that he wants to play football for one season. And I mean, how great would it be if Ridgefield, you know, was a playoff team and got to the state tournament and made a run in his 1 year of football? So, you know, again, it's not very uncommon. It's not uncommon for throwers to play football. The crossover is pretty natural. But a guy like Trey Knight, you know, that'll be a fun storyline to monitor throughout the season.
Ridgefield head coach Scott Rice, who, like I said, is in his first year. When Trey came out to the first football meeting after the spring, toward the end of the school year, you know, Trey had missed all of spring practice. So he had heard that he was going to potentially come out, and he kind of said, "Oh, I'll believe it when I see it." Well, he shows up to the first meeting. This is something that he had done in previous years, as he floated the option of potentially playing football. And he said, "Oh, you know, well, we'll see if he comes to the second meeting." Well, he came to the second meeting, and then he went to their team camp at Linfield College in Oregon. And it was at Linfield where Trey strapped on pads for the first time since eighth grade, and according to Rice, did things that he has not seen a player who he's coached at the high school level do. And even in that short amount of time at Linfield, there were college coaches there that were going, "Who the heck is this?" And Rice expects that to be a trend. Obviously, for Knight, it's not going to really matter. You know, even if he got college offers, he's got, you know, in football, that is, he's got, you know, USC, the Penn States. He's got every great program that are knocking on his door. You know, he spent part of this summer at a New Balance World Championship competition throwing the hammer in Cuba for Team USA. So this is someone that is going to have to, you know, teach his body to train in a completely different way, which I think is a really, you know, it's one of the reasons that so many are advocates for high school players playing multiple sports, is that, you know, throwing the hammer, doing this very specific, these very specific workout regimens and, you know, lifts, he didn't really have much conditioning. And so his body started to cramp up, and he's had to do double conditioning to try to play catch up. So I'm curious, Dan, in multi-sport athletes that you've seen, there's got to be some inherent advantage of playing different sports that work completely different muscles and just train yourself athletically in a different way.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think for most kids, being multi-sport is the way to go. Now, there's going to be some kids who are just, you know, they love one sport more than the other, and they're better at it, and they're just inclined to just do that sport. There's no interest in another, and that's one thing. You know, my daughters are in ice skating, and that is a sport that you have to kind of really focus on early. But I think when we're talking about the team sport, or, you know, even the throwing aspect of a sport, like track and field and the throws that you're mentioning, you know, the ability to get away from a repetitive movement where you're overloading joints and muscle systems, I think, is so very important. I think in the team sports that, you know, you'll have a kid that maybe plays football, basketball, baseball, maybe soccer growing up. I think one of the things that's so good about doing that, until a kid really distances themselves in one sport or another, or finds their true passion, there's nothing wrong with, you know, being the best player in one sport and, for lack of a better term, kind of being middle of the road or even a bench warmer or a role player in another. Every kid has to learn how to adjust to those roles, how to be coached to those roles, how to support their teammates in those roles. And I think that's something that's very important. You know, there many times, you know, maybe you're not the best at one sport because you haven't, you know, physically blossomed yet, or you haven't kind of, it hasn't clicked for you yet. Or if you give up on it too soon, you're not going to give yourself that chance to have the light bulb go off and make an opportunity for yourself. I love hearing stories like this where, you know, a kid, goes back, plays another sport, and all of a sudden, wow, eyes are open, and he might have a new opportunity for him. Whether he takes it or not, that's up to him.
Certainly, and the way he'll configure into Ridgefield's roster, I mean, he grew up playing running back, and Ridgefield already has an all-league running back in Hunter Abrams. And so he, you know, Knight's approach was, well, I'm just going to show up and do anything to help the team. And so they put him out at receiver, and that's where he's going to configure in. And maybe the most fascinating part of this story for me in reporting it, going out and talking to him, is how much he's really embraced the camaraderie of a football team. Throwing is can be such an individual sport, and while he's competing on national and international stages with these track teams, he's meeting people from all around the country and the world. He's competing regionally, and even when he's competing on the Washington high school level, he's on track teams. But it is a very, from a competition standpoint, it can be a little bit isolating, and he's really, really embraced the camaraderie of a football team and the way you know, certain leaders step up and teams are close off the field and motivate each other on the field, and how your actions you know, have an effect on everyone else. And so from two completely different sporting experiences, there can be a lot to learn by experiencing the other.
Yeah, a lot of times I kind of go back to my youth experience with team sports and even my high school. I played all sports growing up. At the age of 12, I realized that soccer was not for me. I was an okay soccer player, but it just didn't excite me anymore, so I stopped playing. I made 12-year-old All-Stars for baseball. And, you know, I had a decision to make, and I told the All-Star coach, hey, coach, I'm sorry, I'm going to miss a couple days of practice because I've already signed up for this basketball camp, and I'm going to miss a couple days. And the coach looked at me as a 12-year-old directly in my face and said, well, sorry to tell you this, but you're probably not going to play a lot come game time. Well, you know, looking back at it, that was the absolute wrong approach for a coach to take. He basically made my mind up right there, or solidified in my mind what I loved the most. I loved basketball the most growing up, and I was a good baseball player. But that, at that point, turned me completely off of baseball, shifted my focus completely to basketball. And then when I got to high school, without much golf training or whatever, I ended up playing freshman, sophomore year as a varsity athlete at Prairie on the golf team. But then I realized and knew, you know what, basketball, an opportunity for scholarships right around the corner. I need to focus in on my fall season to get ready. And it worked out for me well. But looking back, I had good experiences in all sports. Kids are smart. They tend to understand and realize who has their best interests at heart. That baseball coach at 12 years old didn't, and he turned me off from the game of baseball, unfortunately. Soccer was not a sport for me. It just didn't excite me at that time. And I knew where my passion lies, and kids are smart. They'll figure it out. And when they do, and they put their energy and their efforts into that thing that they have a passion about, if they have the talent and the athleticism, there's going to be some special things that happen for those kids.
And there's no harm in trying, as your point illuminates. Now, I got to ask, did that youth baseball coach ever come knocking on the door for tickets when you were in the NBA?
No, he did not. But I'm pretty sure I did see him in a crowd at one point. But, yeah, I loved baseball growing up. But, you know, the coach made me make a decision at that age, and I decided to walk away from it. I did make the right decision, but to this day, I wish I could have gotten one more at-bat.
We're going to take a break. After the break, Todd and I are going to jump into 3A, 4A Greater Spokane League football previews and continuing with our 2019 football preview coverage. So stay tuned.
What's up, Scorebook Live Today listeners? This is Tyson Degenhart, a junior boys basketball player at Mount Spokane High School. I recently attended the NTAA College Basketball Academy, an invite-only development and recruiting weekend aimed at giving potential future college athletes a look at the college experience. I wrote about my experience in a player diary, which is published on Scorebook Live Washington right now. I broke down the pros and cons of the event, like the exposure and the lodging arrangements, and wrote about my experience day by day. To find my story, head to scorebooklive.com/Washington. It is the second of a periodical player diary series, which is aimed at giving a peek behind the curtain into the life of a high school athlete. So far, there are stories from Jabe Mullins, a basketball player at Mount Si High School, and Anaya Hampton, a stand-up hooper at Hudson's Bay. Go check them out and stay tuned for more.
Washington Federal is a bank based in Seattle that operates 235 branches, and it cares deeply about high school sports not only in the Seattle metro area, but across the entire state of Washington. Head to WashingtonFederal.com to learn more or visit your closest branch.
The Greater Spokane League produced a state quarterfinal team in Gonzaga Prep last year and looks to be another competitive year for that league in Spokane at both the 3A and the 4A level. I'm here with Todd Millis to talk about it. Todd, what are you seeing from the league? Who are the powers that be in the recent history of that league still going to be? Is there going to be any shakeup there?
You know, Andy, this is one of the more intriguing 4A leagues, I think, in the state. And if you want to look back at the GSL, I know here recently, you know, Gonzaga Prep won the state championship a few years ago. But you look at this league, you look at Central Valley, you look at Ferris, you look at Lewis and Clark. I mean, these are teams that have gone on and won state championships in the last 15 to 20 years. This league has fared very, very well at the state level, as well as the SPSL 4A and Kinko 4A in winning state championships. And it doesn't really get talked a lot about. You know, maybe it's because, you know, things are peaks and valleys. And, you know, last year Gonzaga Prep did get to the quarterfinals, lost to Woodinville. It's been a couple years, but this is a very, very quality football league that if you look at the top four teams, I think Meade under Benji Sonicson is probably the slight favorite. They're probably going for their first league championship since sharing the title in 2012 with Gonzaga Prep. Now, Benji Sonicson played for Tom Moore at Prosser. He knows offensive football. He's coached at Prosser. He's coached around the state. This is his fourth season. And the one thing I think separates Meade maybe from the other three teams is they have all-league MVP type and maybe possibly all-state types in all three phases. You look at Ryan Blair, quarterback. He's a very accurate passer. Really impressed the GK people when they came over and played in the first round last year. Puts the ball on the money. He's experienced. He's poised. He has a lot of really good receivers to throw to, and he has, for the first time, you know, under Benji, a really solid to above average offensive line. You look on defense, possibly the best player in the league in Ben Voigtlander. He's a defensive end. He'll play a little offense, but he's an impact player at the state level. Might even be on our preseason all-state team. Can really change a game with his pass rushing. You know, he was the number two kind of projected pass rusher on the team going into last year and really emerged as a junior. And then you look at in the special teams, and it's not often talked about, you know, a kicker, but Eli Eldridge, he's got a strong leg. He's an all GSL kicker, you know, in close games, which the GSL teams seem to play a lot of. You know, field position comes into play in a huge way. And to have a kicker like that who can flip the field, you know, the position, field position quickly, you know, that makes a difference. I just think Meade under Benji, they're poised to kind of make a run for their first league championship in a while. But, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if Central Valley, this is a team that's traded league championships here recently with Gonzaga Prep. They're always physical. Their quarterback is Matt Gabbert. Do people recognize that last name? It's Blaine Gabbert's. Yeah, he's built like Blaine Gabbert, who is his first cousin. He has a rocket of an arm. Last year, they were plagued by some inexperience in the receiving core. I think they figured that out. They've got guys in year two that have made adjustments and are better at catching those hard passes, which, you know, you think about it, you think that wide receivers can catch anything, but a kid that throws that hard, it takes some time, the timing of it, and then just getting your hands conditioned to catch something that hard. They've made market improvement in the off season. So, you know, and then their defensive line might be one of the, you know, arguably the best in the league. So, you know, Central Valley, I think, is going to be maybe the biggest contender to me heading into 2019. Gonzaga Prep. Everybody knows Gonzaga Prep. Evan Weaver, they won the state championship a few years ago. Dave McKenna, you know, he's got a long track record of success. You know, their numbers in the junior and senior class are a little down. They only have three returners on both sides of the ball. But their young talent in the sophomore and freshman class is very, very good. It's if they take a dip from as league champion, if they take a dip this year, it's going to be a slight dip, maybe a one-year blip before they're back to being the Gonzaga Prep that we all know around the state, which is a perennial top six to top eight football team. The team that really intrigues me in this whole thing is Ferris. Tom Yearout used to be the football coach at Lewis and Clark. He won a state championship there. His team's had a reputation of being very, very punishing, physical type, you know, power run football team. He's got the same thing at Ferris. You know, when he took over, 2 years ago, he had to play a lot of sophomores. Now, eight of those guys that played for him as sophomores are basically 3 year regulars as seniors. So he has the experience. He has a really good defense. You know, Jake Davis, Zach Fleming, at corner, Nate Schlosser, one of the better linebackers in the league. If they can get some production out of their quarterback tandem, you know, Jack Clavel is more of the passer, and Kwame Kudar is kind of their slash player. Both of those guys have to be productive for Ferris to really make noise in this league. But they have all the pieces on both sides of the ball to really be heard from this year. And Lewis and Clark has probably the best home run threat that we all know of. He was in our top 100 football players in Washington on Scorebook Live. You know, Keanu Guthmuller, he's a really talented tailback. Anytime he touches the ball, he can score. So, you know, it's a really, really balanced league. I'm very intrigued to see how this unfolds this year. But I'm going to go out and pick Meade, followed by Central Valley. And then I'm going to pick Ferris, which might be a slight upset to some people. Gonzaga Prep at 4, Lewis and Clark 5, and then University bringing up the rear. How do you see it? Who are you picking in the 4A GSL, Andy?
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with you. I don't, you know, it seems like it's one of those leagues we talked about. We talked about the Greater St. Helens League a couple weeks ago, and the Greater Spokane League doesn't strike me as a league that any of three teams could reach the state semis atop the league. But, you know, I see a team like Meade, who's got, as one coach in that league described, the best quarterback in the league. You know, the defense is the big question mark. I don't see it being Gonzaga Prep like it has been in years past. So I guess Central Valley's got to be that the team for me going into the season that I would pick as the favorite, with the exception, like you said, of is Ferris going to come in and shake some things up?
Alrighty then. Yeah, we're done with GSL 4A. Yeah, you can go ahead and then you want to do an introduction to 3A GSL.
Yeah, well, the 3A, I mean, you've got. It's not set up in a similar way, I don't think, going into the season as the 4A. You know, Shadle Park made some waves last year, went 3-0 against 3A teams. They upset Mount Spokane. But I think this year, Mount Spokane bringing back 10 starters, it's going to be theirs to lose. They lost in the first round against Timberline last year by 2 in a game that I know they'd really like to have back. But... You know, you they've got a running back in Cannon Katzer who was injured for a lot of last year, including, I believe, that Shadle game. And, you know, he ran for 1,000 yards as a sophomore at Mead and transferred over and had 10 TDs in his first three games last year. So he's going to be a player to look out for and someone who is going to shoulder a load in that league or on that team. Their quarterback, I think, just to me, is one of the more interesting stories in the region. His name's Jeter Schuurman. He's going to be a senior quarterback. And last time this year being, you know, pre-preseason practice, he was the sixth string quarterback, JV guy. And a string of events led to, you know, injuries and so on and so forth, led to him getting an opportunity, and he maximized on it during the season. And so, you know, I was talking to Terry Clore, the head coach at Mount Spokane, you know, a little bit ago, and he said he basically, you know, any coach is going to tell their backups, is going to keep their backups ready, right? You know, and this is a situation with Jeter that if you're a backup, you are just one play away. And that's what Terry said, that he is, that's kind of his signifier to tell the guys across, his squad. But, you know, despite those injuries, last year they were able to beat two 4A teams, Mead and Gonzaga Prep. So, they still, the guys that got opportunities when the players were injured, you know, they'll be playing more prominent roles this season. So, you know, depth's going to be a strength for Mount Spokane. And, you know, beyond that, we'll see if there's anyone, whether it be Rogers, whether it be Shadle, whether it be University, that can make some noise.
Yeah, I mean, you talked to the 4A GSL coaches. If you were looking at the overall league, and it's a combined 3A, 4A league, you know, Mount Spokane would be right there. They would be listed as a league championship contender. I agree with you. I think this is a top 5, 6, 7 team in the state. You know, they had to come over to Lacey last year and play Timberline. Timberline, you know, beat Kamiokin on that field a few years ago. I think they're the class of the 3A GSL. And, you know, in terms of Eastern Washington, I think, you know, the two teams that are going to come out of Eastern Washington and really make some noise in the state playoffs this year is this Mount Spokane team, like you said, that has a lot of returners. That running back from the transfer from Mead, hopefully he'll stay healthy for a full season. And then Kamiokin, which won the state championship a few years ago. Those two teams are heavy hitters and have really established themselves as the class of Eastern Washington.
Certainly. Yeah, they're a team that, you know, come playoff time, they could be a deep threat. So it's looking up for the GSL this year at both the 4A and the 3A level. So, Todd, I got to ask you, as we're spending time looking at, you know, at different pockets around the state, going classification by classification, you know, what team, what league do you think we should take a look at next week?
Oh, man. What are we? What do we haven't done? Have we done the most popular league, seemingly these days? The ones that seem to, you know, seem to be the class of at least the last few years. I don't think we've talked about the 4A Kinko in Woodinville. And
no, we haven't really touched.
No, the and I think that's that could be a that could be an episode all in itself. But you know, the Kinko is still very talented, very very deep, led by Woodinville. We can get into that next week.
Certainly, certainly, yeah, and we will. And we're releasing these. I know we took last week off of the podcast, which to our loyal listeners, which, gosh, I mean, we know there are many. I mean, we deeply apologize for that. But all jokes aside, we've got a lot of league previews, a lot of individual team previews, and just overall football content coming your way. And so that's going to be starting next week with some of the smaller schools. So we're really excited to roll it out. But for you guys – you know, just keep your eye out for Scorebook Live Washington. There's just going to be a lot to consume if you're a high school football fan from a content standpoint.
And you can read about that mighty Odessa defending B8 state champions. You can start reading about the Odessas and the Onalaskas of the world starting next week on Scorebook Live, the bees.
No kidding. Gosh, I feel like we got to have like some sort of insert, like drop a bomb noise after you saying that. So
that's right.
until we hire a professional production staff, we will leave it here. You you can subscribe to the Scorebook Live podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, anywhere you can get your podcast, Google Play, SoundCloud, and for comprehensive coverage of the state of Washington and high school sports, head to scorebooklive.com/Washington. And as Dan mentioned at the top, head to scorebooklive.com/California if you give a rip about the schools down there, because goodness, there are so many schools, there are so many future Division I players, and just a lot of competitive football to be played down there. And Scorebook Live's got a reporter team who's just doing a heck of a job keeping you up to date and ready for the 2019 football season. So until then, we will see you next week.